Hello and welcome to the Podfather.
Welcome to the Podfather. This is an episode out of time.
But for those curious, we are recording it on the same day as Tequila Sunrise.
So we might still be drinking. So we'll see how that goes.
We will see how it goes.
We've had quite a bit of strong tequila, so I feel warm.
I feel very warm.
Feel warm and ready. We're going to be talking a bit of a rapid-fire episode today. Three films. These are three films that we saw in what could be referred to as a failed attempt to get the Podfather back up and running. This
yes,
was last
exactly
summer.
What it was.
Last summer we saw... We actually saw the first film, Bad Times at El Royale, just as friends.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, we do things just as friends, just the two of us. We just hang out.
Yeah.
So we went and saw a film. Then we saw Widows and Old Man and the Gun, and we recorded episodes on them.
We have episodes that we didn't give to you.
Secret unreleased episodes.
And we are so sorry.
I'm not sorry.
No, it was bad timing. It was a bad time for both of us.
It was a bad time for both of us. It wasn't our best work. We were very busy. Didn't end up, obviously, going in to be more episodes anyway. So that's why they've remained unreleased. That being said, maybe one day, if you decide to give us some money or something like that, we'll show them to you.
Yeah.
We can be bought, probably.
We can be bought.
If you really care.
Yeah.
But what it does mean is that two films already have scores.
Yes.
So we're going to be talking about Widows and Old Man and the Gun with pre-arranged scores.
And that's what I was going to ask you about, Alex, is we don't have a score for Bad Times at the El Royale. Are we going to give it a score today?
Yeah.
Great.
Why not?
Every time I see a movie, whether for The Podfather, well, every time I see a movie at the cinemas, I have a spreadsheet. And I write down the date I saw it, what I saw, where I saw it, a score out of five on my personal personal star scale, which is different to the way I rate my Podfather movies, because The Podfather is a little more nuanced. And who I saw it with. So I've got a little spreadsheet. So I actually know what score I gave this when I saw it. So that's the score I will be giving this.
Okay. Out of five.
Well, yeah, I've converted it.
You've converted it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a fresh score after the discussion.
Okay.
That's fine. Good. I'm happy for you to bring some kind of prearranged things to the table. It's all good.
Wonderful.
It's all good. So we're going to be doing a rapid fire episode. Before that, though, as you've been enjoying our recent Arnott's Time episodes.
Yes.
I think we're going to try a biscuit today.
We are going to try a biscuit. Just another personal tidbit. I've recently started working at Aldi. You would know that I've been at Woolworths for the last 3.5 years, basically. But no, I have a job at Aldi now. Aldi have different biscuit ranges than Woolworths.
Very true.
Most of our biscuits are the Aldi Belmont brand, but we do stock a few Arnott's biscuits, ones that are so iconic you couldn't possibly replace, right? People do knock off mint slices, even though that's iconic. Please, don't worry, I'm not talking shit about mint slices. People do knock off hundreds and thousands. They do knock off cookies. But you can't do knock off shortbread creams. We stock those. We've obviously given those a score before.
Yes.
We also have Scotch Fingers, both the plain and the choc-coated variety.
Mm.
But we also have the biscuit that I've brought today. You can also find it in some of the share packs, which we also stock at Aldi. Shop different at Aldi. Kingston.
Kingston. How have we not done this?
I don't know.
Kingston's pretty classic.
Well, there's a lot of Arnott's biscuits.
Kingston's a pretty iconic one. Do you think it has anything to do with Kingston, Jamaica?
What's that?
A place in Jamaica. I think it's like the main city.
I didn't know that. I don't know much about Jamaica. Please tell me about it. This is a filler episode, basically.
Go there, enjoy some reggae. I think they eat plantain over there. Jerk chicken.
They jerk chicken?
Yep, they jerk chicken. Have you ever had jerk chicken?
No.
Jamaican jerk chicken?
No.
Oof. Mate.
What is it?
It's just like a marinade or a rub.
Speaking of rubbing, I have jerked my own chicken.
Well, you can jerk more than chicken. I learnt that. I'll tell you that much. You can jerk a lot of things. But it's a marinade or a rub, and then you barbecue it, and you get it quite charcoaly and black. And it's
like jerky?
Well, no. It's not like jerky.
Oh.
It's jerk chicken.
Okay.
Sorry. Not like jerky. It's not like a processed snack. It's just like a meal. A bit of rice, beautiful.
Speaking of processed snacks,
Kingston. Okay, I'm going to take one. You take one. Now, these are, for the listeners, they're an Oreo style of biscuit in the sense that you've got two Bickies with some cream in the middle.
Yes, the biscuits themselves are sort of yellowy. What kind of biscuit is this? It almost looks sort of like a ginger nutty, just a plain.
Well, it's like a very plain Anzac cookie style sort of, you know, biscuit.
And the filling.
Brown filling.
Is brown.
Brown filling.
That's all we know. Let's try it.
I think that is Anzac biscuit.
Yeah, it's almost like a shortbready Anzac.
Mm. These are good.
With a chocolate filling.
Mm.
Now, these come in like the classic assorted and the family assorted, both, I think. I've sort of avoided them because I'm not a huge sweet tooth apart from chocolatey things. I don't remember the last time I had a Kingston because normally I would go for a Choc Ripple, a teddy bear biscuit, or a chocolate chip cookie. In a assorted pack. This is a really good biscuit.
I really like it. I have another one.
I'm a convert. They look slightly different to how I remember them looking, though.
I thought they were bigger.
I thought they were bigger too, and maybe it's just, you know, classic downsizing for, you know, if they make these biscuits just 5% smaller in a packet, I mean, it's the amount of dough they would save is enough for another whole packet.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a pretty nuanced flavor as well because you've got the cream chocolatey filling.
Mm.
You've got it's a chewy but like satisfying sort of arrangement in the mouth. You know what I mean? It's got good mouthfeel.
It's got a great mouthfeel.
The more you get it, the more you work in it, the more you get out of it. You know what I mean?
It eats really well.
Yeah. It does. How do you think it goes with a tequila sunrise?
Let me have a sip and let you know. And don't forget to listen to our episode on tequila sunrise.
Not very well.
Not bad. Well,
I don't really like typically to eat with alcohol. It took me a long time to get used to having a beer and like a pub, a Palmer or a burger or whatever. Like, I kind of, do you get that?
No, I quite like it, depending on what it is. You know, like a glass of red wine maybe. And pasta. That date I went on, the second date that I told you about just then, I went on a date. It was a failed date. We went to Tiamo, though. Tiamo's beautiful in Lygon Street. Carlton, shout out. Sponsor the next episode, maybe.
Cinema Nova's there?
Cinema Nova. I had a glass of House Red. It was the first drink I had in a month and a half after my little heart scare. And it went down so well with the pasta.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was amazing.
No, I spoke too soon. There are good combos.
I'll tell you what. I went when I was in Vienna this time 2 and a bit years ago. I went to a wine bar and you would think about peanuts with beer.
Yeah.
But this salty wine snack bar just had peanuts. Shells all over the floor. It was a great vibe, actually. Wine and alcohol, food and alcohol, rather, I think go well together, depending on what you... The Kingston and the Tequila Sunrise maybe isn't a perfect couple. But then who is, really?
Are we going to start tracking... you know, we've got our films, we've got our biscuits. Are we going to start tracking the perfect drinks to go with the films as well?
Only if we start reviewing more drinks.
We might have to get a whole bar going just for these episodes.
Yeah, no, I think that's a bad idea. Listen to us. We're already slurring our words. We're 20 minutes in and we're just talking shit about
some
biscuits.
We're 10 minutes in.
Oh, good. Good. All right. So I won't necessarily... Once we give this a score, I won't tell you where it sits amongst the biscuits yet because this is an episode out of time after all.
Good point. Good point.
But I will tell you what it's near. No, I'll tell you what it's near because if there's something else in its place, that's not an issue. What would you give it out of 10?
I you know what? I'm going to hop in and give that a 9.
Okay.
I'm into that. I'm into that a lot. I think it's a really good sort of alternative to... It's a bit more traditional, but I think it's the best of the traditional style.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got your Tim Tams and your mince slices, which are obviously quite modern, you know, current sweets. This is a bit more like an old Bicky, you know, in the assortment.
You could have it at your grandma's house.
You could have it at your grandma's house.
Or you could have it at a house party.
You could have it at a house party.
I'd be happy either way. Well, you're giving it a 9. Yeah. I'm going to give it an 8.5.
Nice.
So that means it's 8.75 for the Kingston. Now, let me tell you what that's near. It won't necessarily be exact, but it is near Tim Tam Messina Choc Mint and Shapes Nacho Cheese. Both have 8.
Nice.
Honey Jumbles have 8.85. So it's just below the Honey Jumble.
It's an odd score.
Now, 8.75. Let me tell you, if you're going to enjoy this with a film, we've actually got two films on 8.75.
Yeah.
The Departed and Ocean's 8. And I think this would go well with either.
I think they're two very different films, but the thing they might share is the biscuit.
Yes. They would both go well with Kingston. It's sort of a decadent sort of experience like Ocean's 8, but it's also sort of rough.
Yes.
And there's a sandwich going on, like the plot of The Departed.
Yep, and there's a lot to chew into, like the Departed too.
Absolutely. So
this might be one of the few times that the biscuits really actually match what's happening in the...
I think so. This is... I'm very pleased with this.
You could have this at the Met Gala. They'd bring these around on a platter, on a nice silver platter.
Word on the street is that Anna Wintour's favourite biscuit is the Kingston. They were nearly going to call it the Wintour. There was copyright issues. Cast your mind back to mid-2018. You might have seen some trailers start to pop up on the internet that caught people's eye. Why, I wonder? Oh, it's a new Jeff Bridges movie.
Ooh.
Oh, or is it a new Chris Hemsworth movie?
Ooh.
Or maybe it's Dakota Johnson in her new movie.
Ooh.
It's not 50 Shades. How exciting. Or maybe John Hamm on the big screen.
Ah!
Television's John Hamm.
What?
It's bad times at the El Royale. As soon as I saw that trailer, I remember talking to Alex and we were excited. This is exactly our jam. We love John Hamm. Me mostly from his like cameo work and his comedy bits. Alex, big fan of Mad Men back in the day.
Big Mad Men fan. It was everything you wanted out of a trailer and a movie, to be honest with you. And for that reason, I remember at the time I was a little bit scared because I was like, I want to see this so bad. I think it's going to be amazing. But at the same time, you know, with new things, it's always a bit of caution. What if it's shit? Because you, especially, you know, with the Podfather and all the gangster films and all that kind of stuff, like you want it to be the modern day whatever. But you'll never know until later on, really.
You will never know. But now we do.
Well, now we do.
We've seen it. When we decided we were going to record this episode, I went back and watched the start of it.
Okay.
I had to get up at 4:30 in the morning, so I only watched the very start of it. But it reminded me a lot about the way they set up everything that happens. And Drew Goddard is the writer-director of this film. You might know Drew Goddard from such films. He produced The Martian. He wrote and directed The Cabin in the Woods with Chris Hemsworth in that as well. He was a producer on Lost for a few years. He was also the creator of the Netflix Daredevil show.
Nice, that was a good show.
And wrote some of The Defenders. He wrote The Martian as well as produced, and he wrote World War Z with Brad Pitt.
Yep.
He's had a pretty good career,
varied career as well. He's dipped his toes in a lot of genres.
Let me just see. Did he direct this? I believe he did.
Drew Goddard. Directed.
Oh, great. So he wrote and directed it. And it's definitely, this film doesn't exist without such past efforts from people like Tarantino. Like,
yes.
It just doesn't.
Yes.
The premise is there's a hotel that crosses the state line of Nevada and California in the States. Half of it is on the Nevada side, half of it's on the California side. They can't serve booze on the California side or something. Only one of the sides serves booze. And basically the characters, it's the movie starts with Nick Offerman, who you'll know from Parks and Rec and various things. And he's burying something in a hotel room. He rips up the carpet. He rips up the floorboards, buries something and puts all the furniture back. And then he gets shot. Spoiler alert. And that's the start of the film. And then cut to 20 years later or whatever it is. And all these strange characters start appearing. Very, very strange, like very idiosyncratic character types start showing up. There's a priest played by Jeff Bridges. There's a traveling vacuum salesman, and he's sort of he's like this southern foghorn leghorn kind of gentleman. This John Hamm character, right? And then they get there, and Cynthia Erivo, who we're going to talk about later when we talk about Widows, is also in there. And she's sort of like a traveling singer. And they all arrive, and the hotel management isn't there. This young kid, basically, is just asleep in the back room. And anyway, something's a little off about this place. And no one goes there anymore because of the gambling laws or something. And you start to realize no one's really who they say they are. John Hamm's character, spoilers from this point, John Hamm's character sort of very quickly is revealed to be like an FBI agent. Jeff Bridges' character, who's the priest, you're not really sure if he's a priest or not. And then it's pretty much confirmed that he's not really a priest.
Yeah.
Then Dakota Johnson's character shows up, and she's sort of like this no bullshit, fuck you kind of young hippie girl from that era. It's like the 70s. Oh, it's like the 60s, right? It must be like 1969.
Well, it's almost a bit like Manson Family, well, her thing, isn't it?
I was about to say, yeah.
Yeah.
And then her sister shows up tied up, and John Hamm finds out that there's a secret passageway going beyond, like behind all of the rooms that looks through a double-sided mirror, all of the rooms, with cameras set up in some of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And shit goes down from there. There's like kidnappings, there's murders eventually. I won't give too much away, but that's kind of the movie. Like, nothing is what it seems, and everything's going down. There's some bad times happening
at the El Royale. And everyone's stories, in a very Tarantino kind of way, get revealed through sort of what happens as it goes on.
And flashbacks. And
flashbacks. And it's
and there's chapters as well.
Yeah, there is, isn't
like
there?
Chapter one.
I love that.
Me too.
I love that.
It's like a book.
Well, again, you know, like, I think it was like, I mean, it's so silly to say this because, like, Tarantino's not the only person making films like this, clearly, because this film exists. But, you know, he kind of has successfully cornered the market on whatever this genre is, the pulpy, you know, drawing on all sorts of influences, out of order storytelling. He's cornered the market on that. So whenever someone else tries to do it.
Chris Nolan successfully did some out of order storytelling in Dunkirk.
He did.
Arguably his best movie.
I think that's his best movie.
No, you're exactly right. So anytime someone tries to do something like this, it's automatically evokes Tarantino.
You're
going to
compare it. Yeah. But I think this film does a good job of very quickly making you forget that and doing its own thing.
Yes.
And it's really, really fun. It's really keeps you guessing. There's a lot of good little plot moments.
Uh-huh.
I love the two-way mirror thing because it's one of those things where it's like, I mean, particularly in the end, there's this really awesome scene where they're going back between the two rooms. Is that right? That's kind of or even more than two rooms?
One of the mirrors gets broken at some point and that's a huge device. The ending, it sort of falls apart a little bit.
Yeah.
Because, and more spoilers here, but Chris Hemsworth's character is very much a Manson type. And we probably appreciate that a little bit more after delving into Manson a bit more in the last year.
Yes.
Since seeing the movie. But Dakota Johnson and her sister in the film, the sister in particular, is really enamored by this sort of charismatic Chris Hemsworth character who's getting the hippies to kill people. But then he ends up killing people as well. And that sort of, it's meant to evoke Manson clearly, but isn't like an exact replica of, and he's just there because he looks good with like no shirt on. He's not. It's not a particularly great Hemsworth performance, but it's very much a watchable one. And yeah, it's sort of the film winds itself up really tightly.
Yeah.
And the start of the film is so good. I remember we were talking about this at the time, but then the tension doesn't go anywhere towards the end. The film sort of just like the rubber band just lets itself out slowly but surely, and like it's a good movie, but it could have been a better movie, and I don't know how to fix it necessarily. I think they tried to do too much at the end, and they like burned down the hotel and everything, you know. But yeah,
one way you could have fixed it would have been to have more John Hamm.
Yeah, because he gets killed pretty early on.
He's underused in, I mean, okay, to be fair, he was the main star of Mad Men and has probably most of the screen time on that show. But then everything else he's done ever since, or all of the films that he's been in, I think he's been very underused because he always pops up and he's great. And in this film, he was like more kind of eccentric than you're used to seeing him. Like he wasn't the classic John Hamm. He was a bit more kind of all over the show. Yeah, and he's such a good actor.
He gets knocked off pretty early. In Bridesmaids. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And he was also a recurring boyfriend character for Tina Fey in 30 Rock.
Is he really?
Yes.
Does he play himself?
No. He just plays one of her boyfriends. And Matt Damon plays one of her boyfriends. Like, there's some great cameos in that show, actually. John Hamm is very good. And he was promoting something recently. And I'm trying to think what it was.
Is it a new movie?
Something new from John Hamm. He was in Between Two Ferns, the movie.
What, the Zach Galifianakis thing?
Yeah.
They make a movie about that.
It's on Netflix. It's quite fun. But similarly, like, good premise, starts well, and then... fizzles out.
Yeah.
That's what John Hamm's good at now, I guess. The best thing about this movie is Cynthia Erivo. She's like a soul singer, and...
I think she has the best storyline as well, actually.
Yeah.
Probably because she's like the most real character, probably.
Yeah, the least relatable character. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she basically, if you listen to the soundtrack for Bad Times at the Royale, it'll miss out on some of the best moments in the film because they're not on the soundtrack because they're all performed live every take. She's basically a stage performer in musicals.
Performed live on set.
Yeah, who's transitions to film. And so there's a couple of times when John Hamm is walking through and figures out that there's two-way mirrors. There's also a little button you can press and you can hear what's going on in there.
Yeah.
And so Cynthia Erivo is singing, "This old heart of mine's been broke a thousand times," you know, right? And she's singing that to start with. And then... she later on, Jeff Bridges is in the wrong hotel room and he needs to find up this Nick Offerman buried treasure.
Yeah, yeah.
But because they know something's going on and people know what's going on in the rooms, they have to disguise, and it's the best scene in the whole thing. And there's some really long takes that go on between the few rooms, and the way that is directed is amazing. But they get Cynthia Erivo to practice one of her songs, and she sings... "You can't hurry love, no, you just have to wait."
Yeah.
And and then, yeah, they do this clapping thing in time with the hammer going into the floorboards. And it's worth seeing that movie just for her singing that alone sequence, and that sequence.
Yeah, it's very, very clever. And it's one of those things where it's like, I mean, you know, I'm not a writer, but I always wonder with these kind of films, I mean, like, you know, what came first? Like the premise of these people coming together, or the premise of the two-way mirror, or that set. Like, I can imagine that, like, you would have that idea of a scene and then write around it almost, because it's so clever and pivotal. And that always fascinates me, like how they think of these things.
Yeah.
On that though, I'm pretty sure, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in the film, the plot device of the two-way mirror is the whole thing was that didn't they like tape Nixon or someone, or JFK having sex or something like that.
There was like a lot of goings on in the hotel rooms that were all recorded.
So it used to be, in the film, it used to be a hotel that people frequented. And it's actually based on somewhere called the Cal Never Lodge and Casino.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if it actually is between the borders or not, but it's based on somewhere that is right on the border of California and Nevada. So it's based on a real thing. You know, you would think that maybe, definitely, there are stories like that that aren't public that, you know.
Well, think about it. At Disneyland, people, like, give each other gobbies on the Pirates of the Caribbean ride. And the staff see it because it's all recorded, right?
Really?
Yeah, yeah. You look up Disney staff tell sordid tales and you'll hear all sorts of things.
Wait, what's the rides are recorded?
Well, like, there's CCTV footage, right? Because what if someone's, like, going to do something bad or, like, you know...
I think there's a lot of two-way mirrors at Disneyland too.
Yeah.
Have you heard about the tunnels?
Yeah, there's all sorts.
Amazing place.
And when I went to Disneyland in 2013, it was so crowded after the parade that they actually ferried a bunch of us through some of the, not the tunnels, but the back way.
Really?
And it ruined the whole illusion because it's just like
you don't want to see that.
Trash cans and stuff, you know?
Yeah, you don't want to see that. You don't want to see that.
If they do that at Disneyland and people can tell sordid tales about a Disneyland ride, imagine the sort of things that hotel employees could tell you about what they find in hotel rooms after people have been, famous people, and what they know that went down. It's craziness.
And particularly in those days where people, I guess it was either easier to be discreet or you didn't have to be as discreet because, I mean, these days, you know, yes, we are, I mean, the CCTV wasn't around back then. The internet wasn't around back then. You know, it was easier to organise your nefarious activities.
You could just give a big tip to the busboy.
Yeah, exactly. So to have a place where people are anticipating that important people are going to come through and then having a camera set up, I mean, like, you know, it seems fucking weird, but, you know, probably happened.
Probably happened. Now, we do have two more movies to talk about.
Yes.
So I would like to tell you that when I saw this movie with you, I gave it a 3.5 stars out of 5.
Uh-huh.
So that translates to roughly 7 out of 10 because I thought it was pretty good, almost very good, but then it fell flat at the end. So I gave it a 7. What would you like to give it?
I'm going to come in with 7.5, I think.
All right. So 7.25 is the score. Now, where does that sit on our Podfather list? You'll have to look this one up for me.
7.25 puts this film level with 3 films. So it's just below Casino, which has 7.375. It's just above Going in Style, 1979, which has 7. And it's sharing the space of Bugsy Malone, True Romance, and American Gangster.
You know what? I think that's pretty fair because a lot of those movies you've talked about are films with great potential, excellent scenes, some of the best scenes in the whole list.
Some of the great scenes.
And then something that lets down the movie. So I think that's pretty much perfect, actually. Great. There you go.
Great times at the El Royale.
Great times. Almost excellent times.
Almost excellent times.
Well, then, I don't know, what was it, a month later or something?
Yeah, yeah.
We went and saw another movie that was coming out, a heist movie, which we've started doing. A heist movie. Well, we didn't necessarily know it was going to be a heist movie, but we knew there would be a heist involved and that there was crime and that there was Liam Neeson. There was, well, he's hardly in it, but Viola Davis, who leads the film.
Yep.
We've got, what's his name with the skull? The Punisher. John Bernthal is in it.
Oh, was he in this movie?
Very briefly.
No shit.
Yeah, but in the trailer, this is what's in.
Yeah. John Bernthal, I love that guy.
Robert Duvall is in the movie from The Godfather.
Yeah.
Colin Farrell is in the movie. But these are all guys that are pretty much supporting cast to the women. So Viola Davis is in it. Cynthia Erivo is in it.
Michelle Rodriguez.
Yes, from Fast and the Furious, right?
Fast and the Furious.
That very tall woman, what's her name?
Elizabeth Debicki?
Yes, Elizabeth Debicki. Very tall.
She's Australian.
Oh.
Although she was born in France.
Also, Daniel Kaluuya from Get Out was in it.
Yes.
That other guy who's in a lot of stuff now.
Brian Tyree Henry?
Yes. Brian Tyree Henry.
Atlanta.
From Atlanta, yes. It's a great cast. Oh, Carrie Coon is in it.
It's a great cast. It's also a very diverse cast.
Yes. Carrie Coon is in it. And Gillian Flynn wrote the screenplay. Gone Girl, the author of Gone Girl.
Right.
Wrote the screenplay.
Right.
And who directed it? It's Steve McQueen.
Steve McQueen.
Not actor Steve McQueen.
Not the Steve 12 McQueen.
12 Years a Slave and Shame Steve McQueen.
The modern Steve McQueen.
Shame is such a good film if you haven't seen it.
Haven't seen it.
Oh, it's just so good. I wrote some notes when we went and saw this on the 4th of December 2018.
Hot damn.
I wrote some notes, not very detailed notes. I have seen it again recently, though. The notes I made were, heist movie, exclamation mark. Viola Davis, incredible. And then the cast. Twists, violence, buff women. That was pretty much what I wrote.
So, okay. Here's the deal, right? I've told Jordan this already, but I mean, I remembered Bad Times of the El Royale quite well, having seen that before this film. However, for some reason, I cannot for the life of me remember much about this movie. So I must have been having a bad day. I'm going to try and tell you what I think happened.
Yeah.
Briefly.
Oh, please.
And what I think happened was you had the gang, John Bernthal and the gang.
Yep.
Who was headed up by Liam Neeson.
Yep.
They all or most of them died in some...
Yeah, they all died.
Job gone wrong, but not Liam Neeson.
Well, that's a spoiler.
That's a spoiler. They all died in a job gone wrong. I remember it now. They all died in a job gone wrong. And then everyone thought even Liam Neeson was dead. The gals get together and they're like, fuck, what the fuck's going on with these dead guys? Our husbands, they're all gone. Is it because they need to pay someone on behalf of the dudes? So they need to pay a debt. I don't know what the hell the heist was. You're going to have to tell me about that. But I do remember that Liam Neeson ends up being a fuck boy, because Liam Neeson ends up being with another girl, even though his apparent relationship with whoever he was with was like so vibrant and for life and full on and like, oh my God, darling, I would never leave you. But he does because he's Liam Neeson.
I would never leave you, darling. I will find you.
Yeah. and then they end up finding that out at some point. So who's he with? He's with
Viola Davis.
Viola Davis, Harry's wife. That's right, Harry. And she gets very, very upset when that happens. A lot of great performances in this film, actually.
Yes. Well, we liked it quite a lot when we saw it. Quite a lot. So recently I was looking for something to watch with my family. My brother had his girlfriend over as well. And we were just looking for a family movie. And I was like, oh, Widows is good. So nice. I put it on. It didn't hold up as well the second time.
Yeah.
Because it's quite a long film.
Yeah.
And it feels like a long film.
Yeah.
Basically, there's this job gone wrong. But the job is that they're stealing money from one of the mayoral candidates or something. It's mayoral or like the local representative. Played by... so there's basically the Mannings... Who are the African Americans?
Yes, that's right. It's Chicago.
Yeah, and yes. they're competing against the old white guys that have been there for ages, Bob Duvall and his son Colin Farrell.
Yeah,
right. And so this job was stealing money from the African Americans. And then when the job goes wrong, also the car blows up and the money all goes.
Yeah,
or maybe it was a job for them.
Colin Farrell. It was a job. He was corrupt as fuck.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was a job for them. But then he took the money or something, and then basically the Mannings want the money back. And so they go to Viola Davis and they say, well, we know you're living in this fancy as fuck apartment, so we're going to take all your money, and we know you know more than you know, but she doesn't. But then she starts to unravel it. And then she's like, well, we're going to do a heist and we're going to pay them back and keep some for ourselves or something.
Yeah.
I can't remember the exact details because it's quite convoluted, actually. It's hard to follow because then also you get this political rivalry that goes on and like that's a whole side plot. And then
it was pretty multi-layered.
Some of the wives and girlfriends don't want to do it. Jackie Weaver from Animal Kingdom plays DeBecky's mum, and she's like, darling, don't do it. Nah. Like, you know, as she does. And because John Bernthal was sort of, an abuser or something of her. And so anyway, some of the wives and girlfriends want to do it, and they create this gang. And then I can't remember the actor's name, but there's a driver that gets killed, and then they need a new driver. So that's when Cynthia Erivo and her big arm muscles comes onto the scene and she's going to be the new driver, and they stake out and they're going to steal from Colin Farrell's safe, Bob Duvall's safe. And they bloody do. But throughout the process, there's a little dog. A little dog that's Liam Neeson and Viola Davis's dog. And then Viola Davis goes to Carrie Coon's house. Sorry, no character names here, just actors.
Yeah.
And the dog is sniffing at the door, and Viola Davis realizes Liam Neeson is behind the fucking door.
That's right.
He's not dead at all.
That was one of the great reveals,
I think. Yeah, he stole all the money.
Yeah.
And that's like the only like wow moment of the film in terms of plot.
Yeah.
The rest of it's pretty by the book heist movie. They do the heist, something goes wrong, someone gets shot, and then ultimately Liam Neeson's back and he's a real dickhead, and then bam, 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 by Liam Neeson. That's the movie. So it's sort of by the numbers, but really it's a really thoughtful movie and a really slow-paced film. There's a great scene where two of the guys in the Manning gang have done something wrong, and so Daniel Kaluuya, they're just hiding out in a bunker or something, rapping in a school hall or a church hall or something, and they're rapping. And he's like, I heard you spitting bars in there. Like, do it for us. And there's this really long take of them rapping, and then they get fucking shot. And that's the moment. That's the sort of moment in this film that's like a real wow moment. And there's a few of those, some real visceral scenes. But ultimately, particularly rewatching it, it's a real slog to get through the movie. And you know when you're the one that recommends a movie and you view it,
and then,
from that lens, and you're like, oh, I hope everyone's enjoying it. I was watching it thinking, Jesus, this is fucking long. Jeez, what have I done? And then the whole family gasped when Liam Neeson was like, oh, that's exciting. And then that was it. That's the movie.
Yeah.
But then you forget about the whole, old blood versus new blood, mayoral race.
I think, like, you've actually got, and hearing you talk about it and remembering it ticking over in my head.
And it's based on an old TV show.
Right, oh, so it's on a TV show.
Yeah.
You've got two interesting stories, the first one being the corrupt mayor and the rivalry and all that kind of stuff, and then the second one being the actual premise of, here's, a gang of five guys and we've got their widows ganging up as well. And I feel like they could be two different movies and still be great. Maybe they would have, like, I think putting them together does give it a lot of depth, but like you don't necessarily need a shitload of depth. Think about Ocean's 11 or Ocean's 8. They don't have a shitload of depth. They're just heist movies.
Great heist movies.
And in fact, I'm not sure that heist movies need lots of depth because they should be about the heist.
Yes.
So you could, having a political heist drama, it's a lot. For one thing.
Yeah, and it's sort of about gender politics and race politics.
Yeah.
And also just trying to be like two films in one.
Yeah.
And you're right, it is a lot. And there is a way to do it and to be a really thoughtful film. Like think about The Godfather. It has similar things about, old blood versus new blood and connections and one man's rise while another man falls and all of that. And that's a slog too.
The Godfather is, I don't think anyone would deny it's a fucking slog.
It's a slog.
But it, it's one of those few films that the more times you watch it, the more times you go through the slog, the better you feel.
And the soundtrack and the way it's shot really add to the feel. Whereas this is sort of a modern day film. And it is a good film. Don't get me wrong. And when we tell you the score that we gave it at the time, it probably doesn't correlate to the conversation we're having right now, actually, because we really liked it at the time, probably because it was thoughtful.
Yeah.
And we'd been,
and we saw it in the cinema.
And it was like the first thing we saw for this failed reboot.
Failed reboot.
As well. and it was probably exactly the right sort of film that we wanted to see as well.
Well, it followed a lot on what we've been working on, which is, again, expanding our horizons in terms of crime. So we're doing heists, we'll do maybe police dramas, we'll do westerns, we'll do whatever. And it also ticked the box of, huge, great, diverse, but predominantly female cast driving the film. And we want to see more of that kind of stuff.
And this was the first thing we saw since we finished with Ocean's 8.
True. Yeah. So it was coming back in.
And it was like a more serious heist.
And I think it, you know,
women heist.
And you know what? Like it does, it fulfills that. But, you know, if you wanted to see something, if you wanted to see a killer female cast do, you know, a crime film, probably would just say watch Ocean's 8.
You would have more, you would have more fun.
A lot more fun watching Ocean's 8.
Because also the women take a back seat when Colin Farrell starts being like, "Dad, your legacy, blah blah blah."
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck about that actually.
And on reflection, I don't know what we said at the time. You'll have to listen to that episode one day from The Vault if it ever gets released.
Yeah.
I feel like Colin Farrell was possibly one of the weaker roles in the film. I feel from memory, like he didn't really land that well.
I think it was mainly a little bit the role itself as opposed to his performance. It was an unnecessary
elaboration
in the film.
And yeah, I don't know. I don't think he was quite tough enough or something. I remember something about it just kind of rubbed me wrong with him in that film.
Well, can I tell you what we gave it?
Please do. I can see it as well.
I gave it an 8.
Oh, you've got what we both gave it.
Not what we both gave it, although we could figure it out with maths. But I know that I gave it a score of 8.75. That's fucking high, particularly after rewatching it. I wouldn't give it that now. I'd probably give it more like a 7.
Yep, yep.
But I gave it an 8.75. You must have given it a 7 point something, because we gave it a Podfather score of 8.375. That puts it above Jackie Brown on 8.25, Ocean's 11 on something around there, and The Usual Suspects, Boys in the Hood, Animal Kingdom. It puts it above all of that. I would much rather rewatch any of those movies I just said than Widows. I think sometimes it's really nice to have a thoughtful movie, but if you're wanting a fun movie, don't watch Widows.
It's probably a little bit too serious. And I mean, I don't know, like what other films have we got that are like serious? I mean, The Godfather's serious, but
that's the only thing that
I can
think of.
The Usual Suspects is pretty serious.
But it's also fun and it's like pulpy.
Yeah, I think Widows lacks that je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and we might have to ask this question again in a minute when we talk about Old Man and the Gun. You know, talking about a film nearly a year later or 9 months later or whatever, pretty interesting thing to have done. We have never done that before. And obviously, we do have different opinions. And I guess you've actually rewatched. I haven't rewatched it, but I've remembered a lot of it and it's all mellowing out of my mind. And maybe this is something to ask our listeners in the future as well. I wouldn't suggest that we did it for every film.
No.
But some classics, like The Godfather, I think it'd be great to do another episode on that one day. And then maybe some films that are on the list and we always say, I don't know why that's there. Maybe we should go back and rewatch them one day and maybe rescore them.
And also, I guess what's interesting about this film in particular is we saw it at release time. Do you know what I mean? And now we're thinking about it later. Whereas a lot of these movies, we're seeing decades after they were released. So we're viewing it from a different perspective.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah.
Whereas this film, Widows, we saw it at the time it was intended to be seen. And now we're thinking about it after the fact. And that colours the way you think about a movie as well.
A little bit like what we were talking about in the Tequila Sunrise episode. Yeah. And, you know, is Widows like a Tequila Sunrise? Like, I mean, I've not heard... I mean, I didn't hear anyone talking about it at the time.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard anyone talk about it since. And I mean, like, by all accounts, it is a great film. But is it going to be a film that in 20 years' time we find it on IMDb one day and someone says, oh, do you want to give this movie a crack? Or, oh, I never remember that one. You know what I mean? Is it going to be like that? Or, oh, I saw that at the time. Yeah, it was all right.
I think it very well might be. Like something that...
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, never seen it.
A drop in the water.
Yeah. It's a ripple that you know, just gets disguised by all the other ripples.
Well,
not chalk ripples, though.
Speaking of ripples that get lost in the other ripples, should we talk about The Old Man and the Gun?
We should. We should. And this is a really interesting film. It's Robert Redford's... It was touted as Robert Redford's
Swan Song,
his last ever screen performance. I've actually seen him on screen since in a movie you haven't seen.
I'm just reading this now.
Because he has a cameo, spoiler alert, in Avengers Endgame playing his...
Do you reckon that was filmed before?
No, because the directors of Endgame have talked about how they were told that it would be his last ever thing.
I mean, cameos don't necessarily count.
Well, it does count as it being his last ever screen performance.
Yeah. So far.
He's in one scene and he's playing a character from his... he's playing the character from Captain America, The Winter Soldier, which is a great film. But this was his like last movie.
He's 83.
Whereas Avengers was his last show up for a day and get paid to go, hey, Robert Downey Jr., stop that.
Someone might get him to do it again.
Well, it's hard to know. It's hard to know. This was a pre-established character. Do you know what I mean? He doesn't have many of those franchise films. Yeah. But this is a really interesting film. We saw both of those movies at the Classic in Alston Week, didn't we?
In the middle of the day, and I remember we also saw Bad Times Del Royale there.
We did.
Now, Classic Alston Week is a fantastic cinema. I could never recommend going there enough if you're in the area. But if you're going at around 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon... you're probably going to have to put up with some of the lovely older people in the community talking throughout the film, which is a little bit annoying.
But this movie would have been fine if people had been talking through it. No. Because I think it's a strong enough film.
Sure.
And there's not so much going on that you're going to miss important plot points. It's just an old guy who likes Robin Banks. And he's sort of navigating a new romance and is sort of gorgeous because he doesn't know what else to do. He's been in and out of prison his whole life.
Yeah.
And he's this charming sort of Robert Redford type, you could say. And that's kind of it. That's the movie. And he's got some mates, kind of like we likened it at the time to... Going in style, but less funny.
Yeah.
Because he's got these two mates, Danny Glover and Tom Waits, play his mates.
That's right, Tom Waits.
Yes, who you might know from Seven Psychopaths or The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus.
From his amazing music career.
Well, that too. I'm just talking about his movies. and it's got a great supporting cast. Casey Affleck plays a cop. Who's trying to chase him down because they do a heist where they just do a few too many heists basically, and Casey Affleck is on the case. And then basically Robert Redford is charming as always, and he comes across Sissy Spacek, her character, and he's like, "You want to know what I do for work? I'm not going to bloody tell you because." You know, I'm a secretive man, and maybe you wouldn't want to see me again if you knew what I did. And it's just this really nice older romance that you never get to see on screen.
Yeah, exactly. It's a movie that shows you. I mean, you know, it's pretty much what the title says: old man and a gun. It's not a super story heavy film. It's contrasting to Widows. It's very light, but light in the best way. I think it's pretty focused on character development, focused on her kind of dealing with finding out more about him. The chase stuff's pretty good too, because I remember there's this amazing scene where like Casey's in the bank with his son.
Yes.
And Robert Redford
telling a joke about Knick Knack Paddywhack.
Yeah. And then does he rob the bank in that scene or something as well?
Yeah, he does.
But no, I know, and no one, but he does this very well. Yeah.
And Casey Affleck doesn't notice because he's with his kid, and then, oh, you're a bad cop then. And he has to prove himself, I think.
Yeah, right under his nose.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a gorgeous, like you said, it's just a gorgeous film. And, I mean, we actually gave it a lower score at the time than Widows, spoiler alert. But, like, thinking back on it, I mean, I think much more highly of this than that film, you know, funnily enough. Likewise. I kind of want to watch it again.
Yeah, me too. And... only because we've been talking about it. Like, I haven't been sitting at home thinking, oh, I'd love to rewatch The Old Man and the Gun.
Yeah.
But the way I'm remembering it now, mostly for Robert Redford. Like, he's just a real charmer.
Yeah.
He's just a sweet, aging man.
It feels effortless.
Yeah, and he's clearly got this huge, rich history behind him, this cinema history. And obviously one of his films is our top-rated film, and one of his performances is our top-rated performance. And he's just so effortless. And the best, like, I've made some notes when we saw the film as well. And my review at the time was, it's a bit slow. The heisty bits were the best bits.
Yeah.
The trio stuff was the best stuff. It's contemplative, though, which was nice.
Yeah.
And that's really what it is. It's a contemplative. Yeah. It's a man at the end of his career, both off screen and on. It was short, but it felt long. It actually was a short film, but it did drag a little bit. But maybe I wouldn't mind that so much now. I did say it was a bit like a less funny going in style, but it didn't know how to end. Do you remember that? There was some fades, some blue screens. Yes. It was a bit strange.
And then
there
he was like on the road again or something.
Yeah, and there was old Redford footage from the chase, and that took us out of it because it reminded me of Michael Caine in Austin Powers 3.
Yeah.
So that was a bit distracting. It basically... I think if it had a better ending, we would have given it a better score.
Well, maybe, you know, we just spoke about Widows, which suffered from too many subplots. Maybe this could have gone with one more little weaving story to pad it out a little bit.
You know what? I disagree with you.
Take a bit of focus off. Yeah?
I disagree because I think it's got cop chases robber. That's one story. Robber is in love. That's one story. Robber and his mates are retiring. That's another story. That's all I needed, frankly.
Or just more in one of those spaces.
Yeah, and I think what let it down is the ending. I don't even remember how it ends, just that it took ages to end, like some sort of Lord of the Rings film or some shit. But the rest of it, while we were in the movie, I loved it. And then the ending took me out of it. I think that's my review of it. But go and see it. If you like Robert Redford, go and see it. If you like Sissy Spacek, go and see it.
Well, this is. I think if you're into heist films and you've seen The Sting, you know, and particularly, like I said, if you're a fan of Robert Redford, then it is a film to see.
Yeah.
Because, again, it is the last proper film in his career. It's referencing some of that stuff from years and years ago. I mean, it could almost be the same character in a funny way from The Sting, which I think was kind of part of it.
He even wears a suit that's similar at one point, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And it's got some good heist stuff because he plays it so cool and so unsuspectingly. And we need more stories like that, I think, and more characters like that because they're really fun. They're really fun.
And I guess we're talking about Widows as well. Like, they're both heist movies, but... if I had to recommend one to you now, I'd recommend Old Man and the Gun, which is funny, given the score that we gave it. But I guess there's so much going on in Widows that there's almost more to grab onto. Like, if you don't like The Old Man and the Gun, you won't like The Old Man and the Gun. But if you don't like some sort of political race drama, you might like other elements of Widows. And if you don't like women teaming up to rob some rich people, well, you might like the Chicago political war going on. So I feel like with this movie, if you don't like it, you're just not going to like all of it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's true. It's true. It's true.
But we have given it an official Podfather score, and that's an unwavering, thing. I gave this movie... a 6.8. So that means you must have given it a 7.
Yes.
And we gave it a 6.9.
A very unique score. It stands on its own. No other film has received a 6.9, which is interesting.
Why? Because it's like 69? Is that what you're doing? Are you stopping and thinking about how it looks like a rude number, Alex?
I'm not doing that.
Okay.
It's just below Going in Style, which you mentioned a few times.
And I would put it far above it, frankly.
Yeah?
Yeah, in retrospect. I mean, that movie's a fun little old-style comedy.
Yeah.
But this is, like, bizarrely, you know, it's contemplative. Well,
the original Going in Style is a bit dated. But you know what though? Going in Style is a little bit like The Old Man and the Gun because it's like it's the older actors of that time doing something. You know what I mean? Like they were all. It's actually a similar sort of premise. Like it's like, oh, here's some old guys, doing something pretty funny, and awesome. And again, obviously, the remake of Going in Style is that as well. But yeah, The Old Man and the Gun.
And if you're gonna eat it with a biscuit, watch it while eating a biscuit, rather.
You can eat it with a biscuit.
The closest biscuit that we have is a Wagon Wheel, which we did with Daniel on 6.75. And you know what? A Wagon Wheel is an old classic.
Yeah.
And it's actually, we found a perfect we found a perfect match, actually. I would eat a Wagon Wheel and watch this movie. What was Widows again?
8.375.
And so you'd want to eat a Honey Jumble or a Tim Tam Messina Choc Mint. Or
Was Bad Times.
Or actually, you'd want to eat the biscuit that we had today.
Ah, the Kingston.
Which got an 8.75. That's close, all right?
That's close.
That's close. That's the closest thing we have to the Widow's score. And
what did Bad Times Del Real get?
7.25. So for that, you'd want...
Teddy Bear Biscuit
Teddy
Original?
Bear Biscuit. Yeah. I reckon... Teddy Bear Biscuit Original?
I don't know. Why?
Oh, no, you'd want a chocolate-coated one for Bad Times at the Al Royale, wouldn't you? Well, this has been a fun little...
it's been a fun little episode.
Not for you listeners as much, being all reminiscy about a year ago because you didn't know what you were missing a year ago.
Yeah, it's been quite cathartic.
But for us, it's been a real interesting... When you think back on a movie, you often remember bits that you don't realise you're going to remember when you're watching it. So things that stuck out to us when we watched it and maybe coloured our enjoyment of it are not necessarily the things that we're remembering right now.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. If you've had similar experiences, I mean films that you watched years ago that you rewatched with your family or with a partner or you just decided to watch it on Netflix, let us know what you think about it. And honestly, if there's any films in our back catalogue that you think we should do again, let us know.
Yeah, if you disagree with the score or maybe think that 2 or 3 years might have changed our opinion on it, particularly after we've seen a lot of different movies in between, let us know.
Well, and, you know, the first 10 films that we did featured quite a lot, quite a few classics. So like I said, I would love to redo The Godfather one day because my feelings have expanded on that because I've seen it, I believe, at least twice since then. Mm. So I think we will kind of do it over the time, not necessarily anytime soon, but if there are films that you want to hear us talk about again, if you think maybe we could get a guest in to talk about certain things, we'll do it. We're open to anything. If you want it, we'll do it.
And if you want to be a guest.
If you want to be a guest.
Let us know.
If you've got thoughts about
that's,
films.
That's bold of me to put out there.
If you've got thoughts and opinions, write them in or you can send us voice clips. We'll put voice clips in the podcast.
Yes, we absolutely can.
Why the hell not?
Yeah. And I mean, I've rewatched Bob Le Flambeur like 6 times since we watched it, so I'd probably score it much higher now.
Have you actually?
No. No, that film sucks.
What did we see? Bob Le Flambeur and then Bob Le Bricoleur. What was the one the other day?
Bob Le Sponge.
Yeah. Bob le punge.
Yes.
Le punge.
That's my SpongeBob impression to close out a very tequila-fueled episode.
Anyway, let's go.
Oh, I just put another Kingston in my mouth.
Oh, you got time.
That was bad timing. That was bad timing at the El Royale.